summarize what we have done in a lecture yesterday. First, to give an idea of why are we doing this, let me present the 3D gravity action. That is this one. Can be written in terms of the connection field A and the curvature. So what happens if we try to quantize this action in a usual way? First, we will find the conjugated momentum to this operator A. We call it E. And it has this form. And then we analyze this commutator that in this case have three deltas. The problem is that usually in QFT, we smear these operators, A and E, or well, the operators we are doing the commutator, in order to avoid this kind of delta and have very well-defined operators. But in this case, the smearing process wouldn't function because in order to do the smearing, we integrate over spacetime. And in this case, it's 3. And we have a factor of minus g. The factor of minus g changed everything because we now want to quantize g, so this brings problems. In order to avoid this kind of problems, we want to find another canonical pair, which it's its commutator. It's beautiful, it's nice. It doesn't have deltas. And this new pair will be the holonomies and the fluxes. To define holonomies, it's good first to remember that SU2 over Z2 is homeomorphic to SO3. So as we studied before, the conjugate momenta EA and the curvature FAB transform in the fundamental representation of SO3. So if we write them in the basis of the generator of SU2, it will transform in the adjoint representation. Oh, this thing. And for the case of the connection AA, as it transforms in a more strange way, in a stranger way, it will have this new kind of transformation. So the idea is the following. We have manifold, and the operators are defined in one point, well, in different points. And we want to compare the operators between these different points. So as we do in general relativity, we want to define a notion of parallel transport. In order to do this, it's why we define the holonomies. First, we define a line parameterized by S going from 0 to 1, such that the beginning is gamma 0 and the end of gamma 1. And we say our initial vector will be here, B gamma 0. And we want to transport along this line. The transport will be given by this transformation, Bs, Hs, V0, H inverse S, where H will be the holonomy from 0 to S. If we define it in this way, and using the fact that any vector has to transform in this way, we know how H transforms. And also, constraining it to be a parallel transport, so the vector doesn't change as S changes. We have this condition that can be translated into this differential equation. Solving this differential equation with the initial condition that H0 has to be 1, as H0 is not transporting at all, it has to be trivial, we find the definition of Hs in terms of the connection. Now is the time to find its conjugate pair, its canonical pair, that it will be the flux. In order to do this, we define first a curve gamma star that is transverse to the original curve gamma. And using also a notion of parallel transport in this gamma star, we can define E gamma in this way in terms of the holonomies and the triads. In this case, H gamma, gamma star, will be a parallel transport. H gamma, gamma star S will be a parallel transport of gamma star S to the point of intersection and then to the beginning of the curve gamma, i.e. gamma 0, so it's a transport of this. And as it could be important, the prescription we are using in the lecture is that this intersection is in gamma 1/2, or what is the same is gamma star 1/2. So H gamma gamma star can be written as the inverse of H gamma 1/2 and H gamma star, this is wrong, this is one half s. So from s to one half, and then to one half to zero. So if we define the canonical or operators in this way, we find that the Poisson brackets of them are very fine, actually. First, we use the matrix components of the Lonomies. And for the case of the flux, we write it in the in an SU2 basis. So this is a vector, and the Lonomies are matrix components. We do the Poisson brackets of them, and we find these relations that are in terms of also the components of them. We have no delta, and there's no more need of a smear. Thanks.
OK, thanks so much. OK, so yeah, very good summary. So today, we're going to finally define the kinematical Hilbert space. But we're going to see that, in fact, we're more going to work, consider a truncation of the full theory. And for that, so let me maybe, so here we are really in the first step of the Dirac program. So maybe let me give a bit kind of what is going to be the big picture, and then what we're going to do explicitly today. So. The first step is, again, to find some representation of our basic variable as operator in a given Hilbert space that is going to be the kinematical Hilbert space, OK? So here, what we started with was with some continuous variable. Okay. So we had this as, it was reminded here, A of X and so what we did yesterday was to kind of replace this by some holonomies and flux variable, but so we only focus on one link, but you can imagine that instead of working with just curve, we're going to work with very naturally, we're going to go to graph, okay? And on each edge, E, we're going to have an holonomy and a flux that we use E here. Okay. So it's often sometimes called also X in the literature. And so E is one edge of this graph gamma. Okay, so we can already see that we're going to work with some notion of graph. So this is still kind of classical. It's more now, we can see that more as a discrete picture, okay? And what is also nice, this is quite recently, up to very recently, more or less, all the, so let me maybe give the next step that we're going to do today is to go to the quantum level and define an Hilbert space associated with this graph. So and here we're going to have the holonomy flux algebra that is going to be turned into operator. Okay. And within this, we are going to talk about already spin network, and this is going to be what we call the kinematical Hilbert space. But it's again just a truncation of the theory. But let me maybe just comment on these two different steps. So until very recently, these two steps were considering like one, like just one step to go to the Dirac program. And there was no really interest in this subsystem, this part here. But recently, there have been many work done on the discrete, this kind of discrete picture, and all the geometrical interpretation that we can have of it. And this is, if you look at the geometrical interpretation, it's what gives the notion of twisted geometry, that if some people know Regier calculus, it's kind of a generalization of Regier, where you allow to have also some torsion. And so this is kind of discrete picture, okay? We can see that as a discrete. But so when we are here, it's kind of a truncation of our theory, okay? We don't have all the number, we capture here only a finite number of degrees of freedom. And so to go to really the continuum, continuous kinematical Hilbert space here, we need to do a kind of limit as you will be doing anyway in QED or QCD. So in QED, usually you start with a system with your Fock space is just going to describe one particle, then you go to a number n, and then at some point you're supposed to take this n to infinity. In QCD, you will start with, so if it's lattice QCD, you start with a lattice with a fixed length, and then you're going to take a given limit to refine this lattice. Okay, so here also, if you really want to have the full theory, you need to take a limit, and so here. Here, you need to take what we're going to call a projective limit. And we're not going to talk so much about that, of graph Hilbert space. And by graph Hilbert space, I mean this kind of. So I will kind of give an idea of what this limit means. But as often, most of the things we're going to do are going to be at this level. Okay, we don't really need to go, it's very rare that we go here. So now maybe one question we can consider is which kind of, so we're going to see that within this Hilbert space, we can define geometrical operators. And these geometrical operators are going to give us kind of a picture of the what we call a quantum space here. But already at this stage, just because of we have this kind of graph coming out, we can maybe think about what are the notion of space that you know, you are familiar with, okay? Because in fact, space can mean kind of different things, in fact. And if you think about it, of course, when you do physics, you think about, so before Einstein, let's say, you think about more the Newton picture of space, where space is really an entity where you do physics in it, okay? And you can have a notion of empty space and this kind of thing. And what Einstein change kind of with this picture is that now space, this entity exists indeed, but it's a dynamical quantity, okay? So now what we try to do in quantum gravity is, okay, so by dynamical quantity, Einstein was saying that indeed space or space-time even, but let's just right now, since we did this 3+1 splitting, we can just focus on space for a bit. Is a field, okay? It's a gravitational field, and it's what we want to quantize. So what is going to be the notion of quantum space? And in fact, it's going to be not very much related to this kind of, it's not going to remain a lot from the Newton's picture of space, if you want, notion of space. But if you think about space, before doing any physics, you have a notion of space yourself, okay? And it's a very ancient notion of space that was already studied by the Greeks before is this notion of space that you define the notion of where with it. So it's a kind of relational notion of space, okay? You define your notion of where with comparison to something close to you, okay? And it's, yeah, so if before studying physics, it's kind of what you will define as space, or it's the way kids are going to define with what is space is, okay? They are going to say, oh, I'm close to the chair, or I'm close to the door, and they have a notion of what is closest and this kind of thing, okay? So here, the notion, this notion of space is, this relational space is very, is a very ancient picture of space, and the really important notion, so in this relational picture of relational space, let's say, an important notion is this notion of contiguity, okay? And And this is really something that you can see already with graphs that we're going to get. Because what is a graph going to tell you? A graph is really, it's just going to be some kind of combinatorics. And it's kind of what it's telling you is really a notion of agency of space or contiguity. Okay? So this is really something that is going to remain. And we can already see that kind of because of all these graph things. Okay, so we're going to come back on that. And of course, this picture is going to be more clear when we're going to define the geometrical operators. But I just wanted to take the time here to make, to think about what do you think yourself as space. Okay, and indeed, there is all these mathematical things that we know from Newton that has been kind of generalized to a dynamical entity, quantity by Einstein. But we also have another kind of notion of space, and this is really what is going to remain in this kind of quantum picture we're going to get, okay? So think about that, and also maybe it's going to help to understand what are these kind of graphs doing here, okay, and what they mean. But again, it's going to become more clear when we really study kind of geometrical operators and how they act and this kind of thing. So now, as we said, I'm going to focus on a subsystem, a finite number of degrees of freedom, which is Hilbert space associated to the graph. And even before doing that, we can even choose a simpler subsystem, which is just going to be this edge, okay? Because it's more or less what we did yesterday. We work with just, because we wanted to define better, nicer variables, we introduce this graph, this not graph yet, just this path. And we ended up with this new Poisson structure, which is quite nice. So this is this star of SU2, which can be seen as SU2 cross, so SU2 as a group. So here it's not very, so cross small SU2, so the algebra, or sometimes we go to R3. Okay. Okay, so this is, this is not very correct, so maybe this is the star of SU2. Okay, so this is a phase space we have now, and this is what we want to quantize, okay? So this is what we want to turn, what is the associated Hilbert space here, and how these variables turn into operators, okay? So let's look at this, and I'll let you think about this notion of space, and at some point once we're going to introduce more the dynamics, we will have to talk about the notion of time, what does it mean. But I think it's good that you have that in mind, because really quantum gravity really changed this kind of usual notion. So here what we're going to do now is just the quantization of a subsystem, which is just an edge, okay, or edges in. So we want to quantize it as really just a subsystem. So what does it mean? This mean what we need to find. We need to find, I think it's good to remind it here, a kind of representation, or even irreducible representation, but let's just write, of the basic phase space function as operators on some space of function that we need to determine. Then we need to equip this space of function with an inner product, okay, if we want to get so this space of function with an inner product in order to get the space. And then once we have an inner product, we can find a notion of orthonormal basis, okay, for this space. And then this should allow us to find an my basis for this space. Okay, so let's any questions here? Nothing really technical. Okay, so as we said, these holonomies are SU2 group elements. So we want to quantize function of the holonomy, meaning function on the group SU2. Okay. So here, what we need to quantize, so holonomy are SU2 group element. So we need to quantize function on the group. This is kind of the first step. Okay, so sometimes, yeah, I'm just going to call it G, this group. In fact, everything I'm going to say here in this part, even the orthonormal basis thing is going to work for any compact group, okay? So it just, in practice, we're going to work with SU2, but, and quite similarly, since this is now our new configuration variable, okay, the way we quantize the function over the this configuration variable are going to be as a multiplication operator. And of course, if you look at here the Poisson bracket you have, okay, because you remember when I say that, this means that this Poisson bracket needs to turn into the corresponding commutator. Okay. And here, if you look at the fluxes, they do not commute already here. So you don't, as a commutator, they won't commute. So you don't expect that they become multiplication operator. Okay, a multiplication operator. Whereas here we have this equal to zero, so it seems that it's a good choice to quantize as a multiplication operator. So here, quantize as operators. So, I'm going to consider a function from SU2. Yeah, so here I said real, but I can take a complex value. Yeah. And so it means that it's going to take an element G E So for a state in the holonomy representation, we can work in state in the holonomy kind of. What we're going to get is we say that and so now we say that it's act by multiplication. So what does it mean? This means that if f is a function over the group. Okay, what we get here is by multiplication, it's something like this. So in terms of the vector, okay, the action on this is as a kind of wave function. So if you rewrite this now on the vector basis, what you get is that this is and here, so this is fine because multiplication operators commute. So this is okay with the commutation relation we have. So let me put that. And here, multiplication commute. So this is okay, that's what we kind of wanted. Okay, now, so usually you have a multiplication operator and kind of a derivative, okay? An operator acting as a derivative. But let's look maybe to guess what is going to be this derivative. We can start from this commutation relation here, okay? and see what this is going to tell us. Working. So let's look at now together. So what is, so this is, are we going to quantize function on the group? Okay, so in particular the basic function are going to be just the group element, okay, of your of your holonomy. This is so now let's look at the permutation and try to see which operator we can get here. So between flux holonomies. We're here. So I should forget about the I can forget about the E index because it's really not. We're just working with one edge here. So that's all. OK, so here, this, of course, as I just mentioned, it can be seen as a function on the group. OK? And we get, so what was the result? I always confused with the order. OK, and so here, we could rewrite this using the Lie derivative on the group, or if you found the left invariant action, the left invariant derivative, which can be written like this. So here h, and now I'm using my parameter t. Oh, and here I take the m. N index, and then let's put t equals 0 here to be more clear. And this is the left invariant derivative on this object. OK, so why it's left invariant derivative is because the derivative commutes with multiplication of the argument of the group function on the left, OK? From the left. OK, so let's now generalize this to function of the holonomies. OK, so we want to. And then, so generalization. So this is kind of, here we're still at the level of this, nothing is quantum yet. We are not at the level of the commutator. So generalization to function of the holonomy. Okay, so here this means that we expected that we get something like this. It's going to be the left invariant action derivative of evaluated at h. So it can be seen as, which means that here what we want to do is f of and this can represent this Poisson bracket as the action of the flux. Okay? So this is the idea. So now since we're going to use that this Poisson bracket should be mapped into commutators, okay, so what we want is to kind of having this map. What does it mean? We want to have a map like this, where this is what we want to implement. And now we're going to apply that to the constant, the state that I'm going to denote 1 like this, and it corresponds to the constant function. meaning that here, if I evaluate this function on any group element, it still gives you okay, so let's now apply this. So what we want to write is on, so let's start with this. So here we have that this Poisson bracket is equal to here, okay. So we want that this as an operator. What are my indices? K, F, acting on this constant function here, is the same thing as this Poisson bracket we use. So here I'm just using what I wrote before. So EJF as an operator still acting on one. And now we're using here, so we want that this become the commutator of this operator that we need to determine, okay? This is the one we are interested in. So this is the one we want. And here, this operator that we know that is acting as multiplication. So here, if I may expand in just this commutator, what I get is that on F, okay, it just act by multiplication, minus hat, then we're going to forget when we will be at the quantum level, we're going to forget what the hat. Okay, so what can we say here? Here we have to choose something. So we're going to choose that this is equal to zero, but since we expect what we get from here is that this is acting as a derivative, okay? So usually it's quite natural to have that the derivative on a constant function is zero, okay? So here it's kind of a choice, but it's if we choose that, then we find that. So if then what we get is really that this one is acting okay, so this seems to be justified a priori since when the action of a derivative operator on a constant function usually vanish. Okay, so now what are the action of the flux E J on a state? So now we can deduce the action of on the given any state, okay? Here we're looking at this particular constant function, but here this constant function, this state can be obtained by the action of this multiplicative operator on the constant function. So what we get here is really that the action of E on any function is going to be given by the left invariant derivative acting on this state. Okay, so this is our action. Now we need to check. So here we use, so we're okay with this bracket. We use this bracket to determine the action of this as an operator. Now we need to check that this bracket now is consistent. Okay, so what we get that meaning that the commutator we get from this bracket is consistent with this choice of operators. Okay, so maybe let's do that, and then I can take questions if there are questions here. Thank you. fancy. Fancy. Of the finite commutation relation. Between the okay, so here we get what we want is that acting on any state. So I can expand that. Okay, so if now I write this in terms of the derivative, what I get is, so since it's quadratic, sorry, this is acting on the state. Since it's quadratic, I get this I h bar squared, which is going to be. And here, I'm expecting that this should give me, if I'm using what I have here, maybe I'm going to use this to remind that it's an action, a group action here. What we need to check, so this is right now a question mark, is if this is equal to so j k, where here the Poisson brackets, so this results in as an operator acting on the same state. Okay. So what we can do here, we can, instead of just using any state here, we can use we can evaluate that on matrix element. So let's evaluate okay. So let's do that just on matrix element here. What we want to evaluate is these things. So again, it's a group action. So as a group action, this means that this should be the same thing as, so acting on that. So by definition, this is going to be the derivative with respect to one first parameter. I need to introduce second parameter of all these things. So now I have a commutator. So the first term gives me h, and then it's multiplied by stj tk, and then it's the matrix element mn for that minus the other way around. Okay, so let me finish to write this and then see with you if you agree with that. Okay, so here I was saying JK, so JK and KJ, KJ. Okay, everyone agree with that? Yeah? Okay. So now, if I'm performing this derivation, okay, what I get here is really just h times the commutator of this SU2 Poisson bracket, this SU2 generator, sorry, Tj Tk, and then it's just the matrix element of this big matrix. And here, so I'm just using the commutation relation, so I get epsilon j k l of H-E-T-L. And this can be written, of course, as epsilon J-K-L. And the derivative acting on H of E-T-L. And this is exactly, and this is exactly what I was looking for, because this is exactly epsilon J-K-L. Okay, so this is, so the Poisson bracket of two fluxes give me another flux with this epsilon AJK in front of it. What I wanted to show that this equality is true was exactly to show that, so here, of course, I get the, Yeah, so I just computed that explicitly to show that what you get is indeed this epsilon JKL, and as it was the action of E on my matrix element here. Okay. So this one, just, is that okay with the? Oh yeah, because in the definition of E, so then you need to the IH bar appear here. Okay, so any questions? So this, yeah. Just generalize to function of any matrix element. So what we have is really that K is H bar. Bracket. Seen as an operator. Okay. So,
So I don't understand where the indexes M and N enter in the first equation. In what we were doing first, there are no NMs. Indexes, and then we
here?
Say that we, yeah, but where are there?
So here it does that as instead of just, so this is a function on the group.
Okay.
So now I'm just looking at kind of a specific, simpler example where my function of the group is just a group element. Okay. So this is, so I'm looking at what is here, but I'm acting on this group element instead of any random function on the group.
So, yeah, you're acting in something before mapping it to the complex. That H, M, N is still an element of the group.
Yeah, so H is a SU2 matrix element, is a SU2 matrix, okay? Is an element of SU2, and now I'm just looking at just a specific
component.
Okay. Any questions here? No, everything is fine. Okay, so if everything is fine, what we have here is we found a representation of the basic phase space function as operator on some space of function. Okay, so our basic function was this volonomy and flux. Our space of function are the space as a function over the group SU2. And we found that indeed the holonomy can be function of the holonomy, can be quantized as just multiplication operator, and we found that the flux can be quantized as this derivative operator. Okay. So now the next step is to find Hilbert space we need we need to select an inner product, okay? And given by here, it's going to be given, of course, since our space of function is function over SU2, is going to be given by some integration over the SU2 group manifold, okay? And the idea normally is that the inner product is going to tell you what we want is that these fluxes as operator are kind of symmetric or at least better self-adjoint operators. Okay, then we're going to, in fact, consider the exponential of the fluxes. And the exponential of the fluxes, because of this relation, are going to lead to right translation. So the idea is what we want is want to find an inner product that is invariant under right translation. And in fact, for SU2 and for any compact group, we can do something better, which is because we have the Haar measure. So I don't know if you know the Haar measure, but the Haar measure is invariant under left and right translation, okay? And this is, I'm not going to give too many details maybe on this. This measure, because in fact, in practice, we're not going to use. So of course, it can be written explicitly if you. So yeah, in one tutorial, you've seen this decomposition of SU2 in terms of just one angle and one normal vector. Okay. And there are another. Parametrization of SU2, that is also the one that you need to know, I think, if you want to use, for example, Mathematica, is in terms of these Euler angles. And in fact, it's very simple to write, to decompose the R measure in term, to write it in terms of these Euler angles, and to see that it's indeed really, as you've seen in the tutorial, SU2 can be seen as S3, the three sphere. And it's very obvious that this we just write kind of the measure for the three sphere in terms of these Euler angles, and just give you exactly the R measure. Okay, so I'm not going to. In practice, we're never going to really use it because we're not going to use these bases. We're really going to go in the spin bases. Okay, this is going to be the which bases we're going, which orthonormal bases we're going to choose for this space. And again, in the tutorial, I think you're. Seen, or at least you read that there was this Wigner, that's Wigner, I got. The Peter-Weyl theorem, sorry. The Peter-Weyl theorem that is going to define an orthonormal basis for the kinematical hyperspace we have here. But so first, maybe just one word on this R measure we're going to use. So here, yeah, we did. Just to check, I haven't. It's already here. Yeah, thank you. Sometimes it's difficult to know if it's a ball or not. Okay, thanks. So we did step, so kind of we are in step one of Dirac, of the Dirac program, and we did step 1A, okay? So. The first one, to find representation as operator. Now we need to equip this space of function with an inner product. And here, the, for this, we're going to use the R measure. And this is exists for any compact group, so this is a nice one. And what is this R measure satisfying that we're going to use for us? Is really, of course, it's normalized. So if it's just on SU2 here, it's one, and then it's invariant under left and right action. Okay, so meaning that you have all these things. And yeah, even you can. So what is now our Hilbert space? So because we have a measure, we can define an inner product. So now the inner product between two states. So these two states are defined over the function. So we can define really, so maybe let's call them differently. to add the measure, so the R measure. And this is our inner product. Okay, so now we have kind of Hilbert space. Over, so for one edge, okay, so here we're really considering a subsystem, so we're not even at the level of the graph, we're just level at the edge, where here it's just really the space of square integrable function over the group SU2, so let's write it as SU2, and with the measure, we're using the R measure. Okay, so the next step is, what is the orthonormal basis here, now that we have a measure? And this is going to be given by the Peter-Weyl theorem. So I'm just going to remind it, and then we're going to use it. So this was step 1b that was much quicker than step 1a, and we move to step 1c, and we're going to be almost done for step 1 today, so this is amazing. And then we're kind of going to start really talking about geometrical operator. Well, in the 3D context, yeah, we won't have so much, but still we can have a kind of geometrical picture. So what is this Peter-Weyl theorem? I'm going to write it explicitly again. So it was maybe given in one of the tutorials. But so here, given a function over the group, SU2, it can be expressed as a sum over irreducible representation of SU2. So, namely, you can rewrite so it's kind of a Fourier transform here that we define. Where we sum over all irreducible representations. So J here is a half integer, right, for SU2. And the MN are going to be magnetic numbers. So each time they can go from minus J to plus J, okay, for any. So here, where this coefficient is really, it's really similar to what you do in Fourier transform, where you get that this is kind of the inverse thing. So you get, where here we use the Hall measure over SU2, MN. And what is this dj here? It's the dimension of your space for representation j. So it's equal to 2j plus 1. Okay, for a given j, m can go from minus j to plus j, so you get 2. And so this Peter-Weyl theorem states that an orthonormal basis for this space of functions, so the square integral function over SU2, is given by some matrix element of the irreducible representation of SU2. So here, now we're going to switch bases instead of, and well, where should I write this? Maybe here. Finish here. And here we're going to introduce this new state basis, Jn. And we're going to start working with that tomorrow. So here it's just a normalization. Okay, so this is because we want them to be normalized. And so here is the basis we're going to work with. Okay. And the previous statement here, just because here it's an orthonormal basis, okay, we have that. Oh, this is translated. So if you look at the So integration j prime, m prime, n prime, g, dg, here where g is the SE2 group element, here what you get some normalization thing, and then delta j, g prime, and this basis from another complete basis. From another complete basis. So here, what you get is if you sum over all j, all m, all n. Okay. So here, j again is an half integer. M can go from minus j to plus j. The same with n. They're both magnetic numbers. We see that they have a kind of different interpretation. And this is really an identity for the okay, so this is a new basis we're going to work with tomorrow. And we're going to, so we've seen how this multiplication derivative operator is acting on our previous basis where we just consider. So now we will have to translate how the derivative operator is going to act on this particular basis. Okay, and it's thanks to the flux operator that we're going to define the geometrical operators that we're going to study tomorrow.